What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, still masking and socially distancing when and where necessary. And welcome to another Thursday show as we continue our exit interviews, joined as always by Michael F. Florio and our producer, Steve Manny. And fellas, I wanted to start today with this fan-controlled football league. I don't know if you guys have either of you seen or heard anything about this fan controlled football league?
Only Johnny Manziel.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how we all heard about it. The news hit a couple weeks ago that Johnny Manziel was signing with this league. The basics of it are, as the name suggests, fans can kind of control. You can call plays. Here's the thing. I don't know how much I know about it. I don't know how much either of you guys know about it. Like, how much control do fans get over this thing? Anybody know? Like, do you get to control personnel that's on the field? I mean, I don't even know how much input the fans get here.
So because I don't either. And I just went to their website and their website says you control the plays. So okay. I'm guessing it would be cool if you could control personnel, because I would be throwing out some weird alignments and seeing how it works. But yeah, I'm curious too. So is it like in Madden where they give you like three or four plays and you pick one, or I don't know, but it sounds pretty cool to get to kind of be involved and pick the plays.
I'm interested how high the bar will be to be able to call plays. Like, do you have to show that you know football a little bit and call smart plays? Or can you do what I do when you play Madden and just blitz all 11 players and just see what happens and watch chaos ensue, or just throw a Hail Mary every play? That's what I would love to see, just some wacky football that makes no sense.
I just think it's going to be interesting because, you know, like, football Twitter – basically has decided that, you know, punting is not necessary anymore. So like I feel like the fan controlled football league won't have punters because no one's going to use them unless it's like 4th and 23 or something like that. Running backs might get the ball. Running backs might get like, you know, 10 touches a game and like 8 of them will be targets. I am just sort of curious to see. Here's the other part though, because I mean, we are a fantasy football podcast. Would either of you play Fantasy FCF? Like,
oh, this is tricky,
right? That's why I thought about this, because like if you're controlling it, I mean, if you have like a certain player, like wouldn't you just vote to like, hey, throw the ball to, you know, this guy all the time, right? Because he's on my team.
That's yeah, weird. my fantasy players would be averaging like 30 touches a game if I had any say in the matter, because that, to me, that's the most frustrating part of playing fantasy, is like watching it and being like, why are you taking off like your better running back or anything? So I think the big fantasy players in those contests would have a ton of touches. It's pretty cool though, Marcus. I like Marshawn Lynch, Austin Eckler are owners of teams in this league. So that's, if cool. Austin Eckler was playing, I would give him every single touch every single time.
Right. That's the thing. You know, I mean, like, you know, running backs would matter because the guys that you draft, like, you would just want to load them up with touches. Right. Like, you know, if you have Nick Chubb in a league like this, Nick Chubb's going to touch the ball like 50 times because I want as much opportunity as I could possibly get. So, it was just a weird thought I had. I'm very curious to see how this league works. I believe they're trying to get off the ground in 2021. We'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of spring/ alternative football leagues that are out there now, and so curious to see how long this lasts. But
I played AAF fantasy.
I was going to ask if you played AAF fantasy.
I did play XFL last year. I was like, let me, because AAF was kind of rough, the site, and because it wasn't on like, you know, normal platform, so it was kind of like a custom made site, and it got the job done, but guessing usage and stuff each week was very, very tricky. So I the XFL, I kind of went in like, I'll take a wait and see approach. But third year in a row, Marcus, we're going to get to play some sort of fantasy football during the offseason. So I'll take it.
I laughed, you know. I mean, it was amusing watching as people were playing AAF fantasy leagues and seeing people create content. I mean, look, you know, God bless Evan Silva, man. I mean, like, you know, his His matchups column, you know, for years has always been maybe one of the marquee pieces of fantasy content out there on the internet. And, you know, he immediately dove in and started doing like matchups columns for AAF. And, you know, like I said, God bless him, because like there are a lot of dudes that I had never ever heard of in my life. And, you know, he's trying to predict matchups and production and that sort of thing. I'd imagine, you know, we may see the same thing if people really want to play fan controlled football fantasy.
Johnny Manziel would be the number one pick, right? Just on name basis.
Just on name value. Yeah, basically just on name value. Everybody's going to draft Manziel. Although, here's the thing. His stint in Canada did not go well.
No, it did not.
He had that game where he threw like a bunch of interceptions and ended up getting benched. Like, it did not go well for him in Canada. So I don't know if the fan control league is going to be any better. Who knows? At some point, like, I expect to see Johnny Manziel like on The Challenge on MTV or something like that.
Those leagues are cool for, like, you know, I'm not the biggest college football fan, but I feel like if you're like a big time college football fan, like those leagues are really cool because there's a lot of really talented players who just don't get to make it into the NFL. So they get a second chance. You get to watch them. And it's football during the off season. So yes, it's not NFL. Nothing will ever compare to the NFL, but it's still football.
I think that's kind of where a lot of people fall. It's like a lot of people who watch it and who, you know, who gamble on it, who play fantasy on it. It's something to do. And there is that element of, you know, you peruse the rosters and you're like, hey, I remember that guy. You know, I remember that guy from college. He played at blank, or even the, hey, he spent, you know, half a season playing in the NFL, something like that. So I'm sure that's going to be part of it. So, I just thought that was interesting. I thought it was just a fun little topic to chat about. All right. So let's get back though to our exit interviews that we've been doing. We are numbers 13 through 16 here. So let's start this one with the Los Angeles Chargers, who are a riddle wrapped inside an enigma covered by a puzzle. They were 7-9 this year. Although when you think about how their season went, I feel like 7 wins seems like a lot, just because it just seemed like they were on the brink of disaster every single week. But they were 7-9. They are in the 13th slot for the draft this year. I will say, I mean, you talk about what was good. I think it's easy just to start with Justin Herbert, Florio. I mean, the guy came out, was thrown into the deep end when Tyrod Taylor was not able to play after just a really scary medical mishap early in the season. They threw Justin Herbert into the deep end, and he shined. He brought everybody along with him. He made it better for Keenan Allen and all those other guys. I mean, I feel like that was sort of the good for this team. I don't know if there was anything else you saw that really stuck out to you.
To me, I think it's Herbert, and I think it's also the fact that Herbert and the offense was still funneling through their top fantasy assets. Like, it wasn't like Herbert was a spread the ball type of quarterback. Like, Keenan Allen for most of the year was leading the league in target share before he got hurt late in the season. And then once Austin Eckler returned, he was seeing, you know, like 9-10 plus targets every single game until the very like last 2 weeks of the season. So the fact that he not only that Herbert, you know, was second all time for rookies in passing yards behind only Andrew Luck, the fact that he broke the record for most passing yards per game, most rookie touchdown passes by a rookie, like all of that is great. But for me, even a step further is the fact that he propelled Keenan Allen, and I think actually made Keenan Allen better than Keenan Allen had ever been in fantasy before. And I'm someone who I was out on Keenan Allen coming into this year because of Tyrod. But before that, I've really been high on Keenan Allen, and he just took his game to a new level. And Austin Eckler did as well with Justin Herbert.
The fact that he made Keenan Allen so special this year in fantasy, I think, is what was maybe the biggest pleasant surprise. I know that I was sort of optimistic about Keenan Allen, but I also admit that I'm maybe a little more, blinded, a little more of a Tyrod stan than a lot of people. So I will admit that about myself, that maybe it's a little bit of a flaw for me. I had told myself the story where Tyrod was going to be okay and Keenan Allen was going to see a bunch of targets and everything was going to be fine. But I also still understood the other side of it. I understood the people who had concerns, and I understood why Keenan was going off the board in, say, like the fifth round or something like that in a lot of leagues. I completely understood that. It worked out. for Keenan Allen, maybe not the way I had anticipated, but that ended up being good. And you talk about Austin Eckler. That was another thing that I think we all felt like coming into the year, regardless of who the quarterback was, that Austin Eckler was going to be okay. And he was. Although remember back in weeks one and week two, Florida, when we thought Josh Kelly was just going to take over everything. Like, he had that really good game in week one and decent game in week two. And after that, we were like, man, this is not going to be good for Austin Eckler. He's going to get his workload cut into. And then midway through the year, it was like the Kalen Ballage show there with the Chargers, because Josh Kelly just sort of disappeared. Yeah, besides that, too, before we get into like the things that need to improve, I mean, how are we feeling about Josh Kelly? Are we sort of out on him, or was this just like a rookie trying to get his feet underneath him?
Yeah, I'm out on Josh Kelly, and he is someone that, like, I was super high on Austin Eckler, and I drafted him in a bunch of leagues coming into this year saying he was a first-round pick. But I also thought that Joshua Kelly going in the double-digit rounds was a good value, because I thought that they were still going to use, like, a change of pace back kind of. I thought Eckler would get the, you know, like 60% of the work, and then there would be someone else there to take, especially on the ground game, because I didn't think they wanted to use Eckler, you know, running the ball like 20 times a game. And Joshua Kelly just wasn't the answer at any point this season besides week one. Like, I looked at it the other day, and in fantasy points per touch, he was by far the lowest of all the Chargers running backs this year. Kalen Ballage was showing him up. Kalen Ballage, Mark, is someone who we thought wasn't going to be in the league after he got cut this year. Then he goes to Los Angeles and outperforms Joshua Kelly. So maybe it was just a one-year thing. Rookies did have a really weird go coming into the season, but as long as Austin Eckler is still on this roster, he is going to dominate pass game usage. So I think that just leaves Joshua Kelly to be kind of a touchdown dependent or a very low floor running back.
I really thought at one point, and I said this, that I thought Joshua Kelly was going to come in there and sort of be Melvin Gordon 2.0. But I have to really sort of recant that, because it just doesn't look that way. And who knows, maybe next year is going to be a better year for him. But he fell off a cliff after the first two or three weeks of the season this past year. So we talked about what was good. What did you see from this team that needs to improve? I mean, special teams was a disaster, but that doesn't necessarily impact us immediately. What, you know, maybe offensively or fantasy wise needs to get better for this team?
It's sad to say, because as like watching him on Hard Knocks and stuff, Anthony Lynn seems like a really good dude, and he comes from the Bills, which I'm a fan of, but I did not think his play calling was really getting the job done this year. And there were so many blunders. Like, to me, one that stands out is against the Bills. The Chargers had the ball inside the 5-yard line with like 30 seconds left, and they got one play, and it was a QB sneak that was stuffed, and that was it. And like, there was just so many moments this year where it was like head scratching. Like, the Chargers, it just felt like couldn't get out of their own way. And I think, and I've been on record saying it a lot, like, I think this offense has all the pieces to be the next great offense in this league. They have Justin Herbert, who has shown us he can play the quarterback position at a high level in the NFL. Keenan Allen is a top 5 wide receiver with Justin Herbert. I love Austin Eckler and his ability, especially as a dual threat out of the backfield. Like, can they be Kansas City? Maybe not, but can they be pretty close to that? I do think they have the pieces there, but I think they need a new play caller, and that's why I'm hoping, like, Dabble, or it doesn't sound like Bieniemy is going to end up anywhere right now, but I'm hoping one of these good offensive minds end up with the Chargers, because I think that it could take this offense to the next level and be really great for fantasy.
To that end, I want to see some more consistency out of Mike Williams, because you talk about the pieces they have there. And, you know, we've obviously seen Keenan Allen do his thing. We know what Austin Eckler can do. I'm waiting to see some more consistency out of Mike Williams. I mean, he's a guy who have those big spike games, and we know that they love using him as a downfield threat, as kind of a jump ball guy. But I just wonder whether or not he can be more than that, and whether or not he can be more of a compliment to what they're doing with Allen. And look, maybe in some ways, maybe it's a be careful what you ask for, right? Because if Mike Williams becomes more consistent, does that mean Keenan Allen can stay as productive? I don't know. But I mean, this is a guy that I have loved the last couple of years, drafting sort of in the later rounds and trying to fit him in as a second or third wide receiver. But, you know, half the time I end up disappointed because you get a lot of games where it's like, you know, he gets five targets and it's, you know, three catches for, you know, 23 yards or something like that. And that's hard to live with. But then, you know, other weeks you get the nice 100 yards and a touchdown or two sort of game. I want something. I'll take something in between those two if that's what I can get consistently. If I can consistently get the, you know, six catches for 70 yards and the occasional touchdown, I'll take that over riding the week to week roller coaster of Mike Williams. And that's one thing I just want to see get better for next year.
He kind of reminds me of pre-2020 Will Fuller.
Yeah.
Like very boomer bust, but when he shows out, you're like, this guy has so much. It's easy to get sucked in because you can see the talent and there's stuff in the stats that say there's talent there. It's just, can he put it together and be consistent?
So speaking of consistency, I mean, Hunter Henry has been a guy that I have loved since the Chargers drafted him. And early in his career, you know, he was splitting time with Antonio Gates. And you're like, look, man, he's playing behind a Hall of Famer. I get it. Right. He's just not going to get a ton of targets. The last couple of years, there hasn't been Gates. The injuries have been a problem. At this point, this far into his career, have we seen the best of Hunter Henry? Has he hit his ceiling, or is there still a possibility that there's something else there for him?
I feel like as long as he stays with the Chargers, this is like he's played five seasons in the NFL now. And I'm just like you, Marcus. Every year I'm like, he can make the jump. Like he has the physical tools there. There's targets up for grabs, especially after Gates left. But he doesn't have 700 yards in a single season in his career. He's never played 16 games. So take that for what it is, but never having 700 yards. And then he had eight touchdowns his rookie year with Antonio Gates there. Five is his high since then. So for me, it Hunter Henry, it's going to depend on his draft costs next year. Like if people are once again buying into him and he's going as like a top 10 tight end, I will not be taking that shot on him. But if you could get him in the later rounds, maybe even as an upside tight end too, I don't expect that. But if that becomes the case, then I'm much more interested in him. But I just feel like as long as Keenan is there and Mike Williams is there, and then if Austin Eckler's there, like there's just not enough targets, I think, to keep four players fantasy relevant. And I don't think Keenan Allen or Austin Eckler go away.
They definitely aren't going to go away. And so it does become a battle for what's left over between, you know, Mike Williams, Hunter Henry, and whoever else they might bring into this offense next year. It's frustrating because I'm with you. I've seen so much potential. I liked the fit. I liked the ability. But the production just hasn't been there. I mean, the fact that this year was a career high with 60 catches, it just seems like he's close, but just can't ever quite get over the hump. And at this point, I'm starting to feel like maybe he just never will. And this is kind of who Hunter Henry is going to be. Next is the Vikings. Also 7-9. They were in the number 14 draft slot. Look, I'm going to ask you what's good. I feel like I know kind of what at least one part of the answer is going to be, but I'll ask you anyway. I mean, what for you stood out with the Vikings this year?
Justin Jefferson, Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen. Like Justin Jefferson broke Randy Moss's rookie record. I mean, yeah, that is eye-opening right there in itself. And Justin Jefferson, I kind of feel like, Marcus, like the first half of the year, Adam Thielen was the wide receiver one here. But I think as the year went on, like Justin Jefferson usurped him, to use Adam Rank's word, and was like, like he was getting the yards and the targets every week. Thielen was getting more of the touchdowns, but you say it all the time, Marcus, they're a fickle beast, those touchdowns. You can't always rely on them. So I actually, as of today, I have Justin Jefferson ranked higher than Adam Thielen for my way too early 2021 rankings. And I mean, Dalvin Cook is just as good as they get at the running back position. Like, I think he should be the second pick off the board next year.
I love Dalvin Cook. And like I've said before, this time last year, I was sort of pushing Dalvin Cook as a potential, you know, number one overall pick. I was doing it mostly just for the sake of starting conversation. But I think what he showed, and considering how the other top picks went in fantasy, that, you know, if you had decided to make that move, and look, I know very few, if anybody did, but if you had decided to make that move, it would have worked out for you. It would have been pretty good because he was consistently productive. He was on the field certainly a lot more, than guys like McCaffrey and Saquon, what have you. So that would have turned well. Justin Jefferson has been phenomenal, and I believed in him at the start of the year. I thought he was going to be the rookie wide receiver that you wanted to have, And it proved itself to be the case. And I think what was more encouraging about all of it is that he sort of did it by not just being a slot receiver. That was sort of the talk about him coming into the year, that he was a slot receiver. That's what he did at LSU. That's how he was successful. But you go and you look, he played 75% of his snaps out wide. So they figured out how to get him out wide and have him be successful and have him win out there. You know, 5 of his 7 touchdowns came when he was lined up out wide. So that, I think, is a big step forward in his development, in his progression. I think it's how people are going to start to measure him going forward. I still think, and I said this recently on this show, that I think CeeDee Lamb out of this class is the guy who has maybe the highest ceiling overall. But I think Jefferson proved that he is going to be a consistently productive wide receiver year in and year out in this offense. And part of what I love about the Vikings offense is that they are very narrow in terms of their targets. Kirk Cousins usually has like 2 guys that he throws the ball to. Before, it was Thielen and Stephon Diggs. You take Diggs out, you put Jefferson in, things don't change. It's pretty much 2 guys that they throw the football to. And you couldn't really ask for anything better than that. I mean, that's kind of all we want. We just want those guys that we know are going to get targets. Jefferson and Thielen are those guys. So that was good. What was not so good? What do you feel like has to get better here?
So for a real life purpose, I think their defense obviously has to improve. But for fantasy, I don't want a whole lot to change here. Like, you took the words right out of my mouth, Marcus. Like, this offense, they funnel their targets through their 2 best players. And it's frustrating. You know, you could watch other teams. Like, you could watch the Chiefs, and I know Tyreek Hill basically scored a touchdown every single game this year, but there's still moments where, like, you'll be like, Tyreek Hill scored. Oh, wait, no, that's Mecole Hardman. Like, that doesn't happen with the Vikings, you know? One time this year, I think I thought it was Adam Thielen and it was Chad Beebe. But besides that, like, it goes through those 2 guys. So, we've said it a lot with teams with bad defenses. They have to throw more, which means it's just even more to those 2 guys. And the whole running game runs through Dalvin Cook. They hardly take him off the field to get in like Alexander Mattison or any of those guys. So the only change I want to see in 2021 is I want them to move on from Kyle Rudolph and realize what they have in Irv Smith, because they used a very high draft pick on him. And what he showed us in the second half of the season when Kyle Rudolph was out was that he can be a legit top tight end in this league. And I'm very, very high on him heading into next year. If they get rid of Kyle Rudolph, like, he will be a top 10 tight end for me easily if they move on from Rudolph.
Yeah, it's sort of weird to think, right? This is a team that finished 7-9, but offensively, it is everything we wanted in fantasy, right? They've got 3 guys that they get the football to. I'm looking here at the target share, right? I mean, you look at the top 2. So Jefferson had 125. Thielen had 108. The next closest was Dalvin Cook at 54. I mean, like, when they are throwing the ball, you know pretty much where it is going on a consistent basis. You look at the rushing attempts. Dalvin Cook, 312. Second was Alexander Mattison at 96. They have 3 guys in this offense that generally are going to get the football. And for us, that makes it easy. That makes it easy to figure out. And to have all 3 of those guys be productive, I mean, like, I'm going to guess that next year, between Cook, Jefferson, and Thielen, all those guys are going to be off the board by, what, 4th round at the latest? You know, like, I can't imagine that they last beyond then.
Dalvin Cook, I mean, is going top 5 for sure. Right. I think Justin Jefferson is like that 2-3 swing. He can go around there. And then I think by the end of the 4th round, Thielen's gone as well.
Yeah, I don't think any of those guys are still going to be on the board when you get to the 5th round. And I mean, that's cool. Like, we can figure it out. And like, we can all have a level of confidence that they're going to be fairly productive.
You know what's kind of wild? Like, we love these 2 receivers, but no one likes Kirk Cousins.
No one, right? It is weird because Cousins is just kind of like, it's just meh. Like, he's just, you know.
Cousins is that guy that at the end of the year he'll be around like QB 12 or so in total points, but it won't be a fun ride getting
it. It won't be easy. It won't be pretty. No. Right. No, I just say, like, people who love the law, sausage, and Kirk Cousins fantasy points should watch neither of them being made, because it's just not fun to experience. But talking about Adam Thielen, right? And you talked about how Justin Jefferson took over as the Vikings' number 1 receiver late in the year. is Thielen still an overall fantasy wide receiver one, or is he going to, has he been relegated to a wide receiver two starting next year?
For me, I have him as a wide receiver two right now because I have Justin Jefferson in my top 12. Could this offense sustain two top 12 wide receivers? Yes, but I would feel a little bit more comfortable having one in the top 12 and then one like just outside of it, because then you're not, you know, reaching for the ceiling on them. And I just think what we saw out of Justin Jefferson, the fact that down the stretch he was getting more he was just more consistent with the targets and the yardage. And Thielen is their red zone presence and I think is going to get a lot of touchdowns again. But I trust the targets and the yardage more. And Justin Jefferson is still, like, he was a rookie this year without a preseason. He is still very much on the rise, where Adam Thielen is going to be 31 next year. And we hear it all the time, like 31, 32, that's when wide receivers, you start to see a little bit of a dip. I think Thielen is fine. I said I would take him in the top four rounds, but not as a wide receiver one. I like him a lot more as my second wide receiver.
I mean, part of what kept him, I won't say kept him afloat. I mean, the guy had over 900 receiving yards this year. He had 74 catches. Those are not bad numbers, but the 14 touchdowns made a huge difference. And I mean, this is a guy that before this, his previous career high was 9, you know, and he very easily could fall back to 8 or 9 touchdowns again next year, which takes a big chunk out of his production, especially if Jefferson continues to put up the yardage numbers and see those targets, especially downfield. So there's a very real possibility that you could see Adam Thielen kind of fall back and end up, you know, as maybe the wide receiver 18 or 20 next year. Not that he's going to have a bad year, not that he's going to be terrible, just that if he can't pick up the yardage numbers, if he can't get to 1,000 yards, if he can't get you 80, 90 catches, then he really does have to score a huge number of touchdowns, and that's just not guaranteed, really, for anybody, but especially for guys you mentioned who is, you know, on the other side of 30 now.
Were you surprised to see his yardage total at the end of the year? Because I was.
Yeah, I thought for sure he had gotten 1,000 yards. I just kind of thought that was the case, but was very surprised by that when I saw it. All right, so those are the Vikings. Next, and it's weird to be talking about them in this slot, but the New England Patriots. They have the number 15 draft pick. They finished 7-9. And look, 7-9, you know, I talked about the Chargers feeling weird at 7-9 because everything seemed like a weekly disaster for them. By the end, it sort of felt that way for the Patriots too, because offensively they just couldn't do anything. They couldn't move the ball. They couldn't score points. And so it feels like 7-9. It's like, wow, that feels a lot better than I remember it being. I don't know what about this team I liked offensively. I mean, early in the year when they signed Cam Newton in the offseason, we thought, wow, man, if Cam can come back and be what he, you know, even a portion of what he was, this is going to be great. There was just, I'm really scratching my head trying to figure out what I liked offensively about this team this year. And maybe aside from a couple of Damian Harris weeks, it's hard for me to come up with anything. Maybe you can bail me out, but I can't come up with anything that really stood out to me.
No, I can't bail you out because I think that the Patriots were the worst team for fantasy in 2020. Like, once Cam Newton was solid, especially early on because he was running, like getting all of their rushing touchdowns early on. But then down the stretch, like, he really started to sputter. And in games this year without a rushing touchdown, he was averaging single-digit fantasy points up until weeks. That might have changed in week 17 because he had, like, the receiving touchdown and went for nearly 40 fantasy points. But his numbers are also pretty skewed. Like, he had a few really big blow-up games and then, like, a bunch of single-digit fantasy games. And then their running backs, I mean – with Tom Brady gone, they weren't throwing nearly as consistent to James White. So I don't think he, like, most weeks I would have James White ranked in like the 40s at running back, because I was just like, he has no ceiling and his floor is single digits, I think. And then Sony Michel is, I want nothing to do with him. And Damian Harris, I like, he was the bright spot, I would say, for this season. But because of how much they rotated their different running backs and the fact that James White catches the passes, and then at one point Rex Burkhead or Cam Newton were coming in to vulture his touchdowns, Damian Harris was basically a guy who can give you like somewhere between like 9 and 13 fantasy points. I think his ceiling, if they allowed him to be a lead running back, is a lot higher. But like coming into next year, I mean, maybe they bring back Julian Edelman and then he'll like be one player, but do they bring back Cam Newton? I'm not sold. I mean, he got benched how many times this year? Like, do they like Jacoby Myers, N'Keal Harry? I don't want really any interest in them. And then there's no tight end of interest here. And they use so many different running backs that I think Damian Harris is the only one that I'm really going to have any interest for fantasy as of now.
Yeah. So, and that's sort of the thing. It's just, I can't think of anybody. That was kind of the question I was going to ask later was like, is there anybody that's currently on this roster that you draft? And I think the answer is just sort of no. You know, I would imagine we're going to get to the preseason and whatever form of preseason we have this year. Right. And I can certainly imagine there will be a part of the fantasy community that's looking around and saying, you know what? Maybe take a shot at Damian Harris, right? I mean, he's young, he's talented. You know, how much longer can James White really continue on? At this point, we've seen Sony Michel looks like he's pretty much cooked, and I can't imagine they keep trying to run with him. So maybe Damian Harris starts to get some mid to late round love at some point in the preseason. But, you know, Cam Newton looked – I love Cam, but he looked awful this year. You know, they
couldn't throw the ball.
I did. I was Cam for Halloween. I had Cam on a couple of rosters. Like I really tried, and it wasn't working out. Some of it was Cam. I mean, some of it was just some awful throws that he made. Some of it was the fact that he had nobody to throw the football to. You know, we tried it with Jacoby Myers. I was a N'Keal Harry fan when he was at Arizona State, and he has not shown anything. I mean, where else are we going with this? Damir Bird? And I feel like that's the thing. Of all the things offensively that need to get fixed on this team, they have to find at least one wide receiver that can do something for them, right? I mean, they can't expect Julian Edelman to come back and, what, he's going to be 35 next year. They can't expect Julian Edelman to keep bailing them out. They, you know, at some point, N'Keal Harry's got to either develop or they've got to move on from him. Damir Bird has, you know, we sort of know what he is. I don't know if you know, they go after one of the Alabama guys, Florio, if Devontae Smith is still going to be there at 15, if Jalen Waddle is going to be there, but they have to do something to improve this wide receiver core because it was – They had the worst receiver core in the league. I feel like I can just say that flat out. I think they had the worst wide receiver group in the National Football League. And if that doesn't get better, it doesn't really matter who the quarterback is. They're just going to continue to not be able to move the football next year.
Completely agree that I think it was the worst in football. I think they're for fantasy, for their whole offense as a whole, is one of the worst in football. Because even, you know, like some of the bad, maybe the Jets. All right, maybe the Jets, but even some of the bad offenses like Washington, they give us, you know, Gibson and McLaurin, and like there's, you could find pieces of other offenses where you're like, all right, at least there's one or two players that can be somewhat useful for fantasy. But with the Patriots, no. And I do think, because you talk about like fantasy muscle memory a lot, and I think it's great. I think because of that, Julian Edelman will get drafted next year, but mm-hmm. that'll probably be the only reason why.
I mean, you talk about though the Jets, like, you know, the Jets had Jameson Crowder. Like, you know, they like I wouldn't mind having Jameson Crowder on a roster. I mean, we had a Braxton Berrios game. I mean, Breshad Perriman every once in a while showed up and did things. The Patriots offense was just bad, and it is going to be weird to think that no one is going to draft New England Patriots next year, or if they do, they are going to be sort of, you know, dart throws or just sort of reflex picks. Just because that's what we've always done. It's a new world. Look, there are people in the Massachusetts, in the state of Massachusetts and the New England area who are of legal drinking age who don't really understand what it's like for the Patriots to not be good. Like, it's been that long.
This is because I didn't get into football until I was 12 or something. Mm-hmm. And at that point, like, it was well in, like, it was the start of the Patriots first dynasty, I guess, if you want to say. So I, like, to me, besides this year, the Patriots being bad means they didn't make the Super Bowl. Like, it's wild.
It is absolutely. I mean, look, I am old enough. I remember when they lost to the 85 Bears and they were just pummeled in the Super Bowl by the 85 Bears. And that was like the pinnacle of Patriot success in my lifetime until, you know, this whole thing started with Tom Brady. And so like it's been a long, long time since it has been this way. But the rebuild is underway in Foxborough, and it's going to be kind of intriguing to watch. But also for a lot of us who just got tired of you know, hearing crowing from the northeast of the country, it'll be nice to have a little bit of silence for at least for a couple of years.
Don't worry, all their other teams will keep winning.
Yeah. So, all right, last one here. It's the Cardinals. It's our first 500 team. They were 8-8. They have the number 16 slot, and I would say that, you know, I have a couple of friends who are Cardinals fans who live in Phoenix, and I know that they were just sort of disgusted with the way the season ended for them because it just seemed like they had it there, you know, to use a hockey term. It was on their stick, and they just couldn't score. They could not close the deal in terms of getting to the playoffs. Some bad losses down the stretch. So instead of being in the postseason, they are picking 16th, which sort of puts them in kind of football purgatory in terms of trying to build this roster. But I would say that when it came to what's good, I mean, there was Kyler, there was Nuke. And those two things were very, very good. And I joked early in the year that the offense basically consisted of Kyler runs the ball, Kyler throws the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. Those things worked for much of the season. They sort of faded down the stretch. But on the whole, for fantasy, those two guys were great. And I don't know if there's anything else that jumped out at you, but those were the two things that I took away from this Cardinals season, at least for fantasy, that we knew week in and week out we were going to be able to rely on.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I was one of the fools who was questioning D-Hop a little bit because my thinking was, all right, he left Houston that ran an offense. Like Bill O'Brien would funnel all 150 targets guaranteed each season to D-Hop. I was like, what if he falls down to 130 and like the offense that likes to spread the ball out a little bit more? It didn't happen. Like he was this team's like receiver threat, and he was their pass catch. And then I feel like D-Hop got a little revenge on me doubting him by, you know, catching the Hail Mary against the Bills. But for me, I think you kind of have to look at the Cardinals seasons in two parts, like what they did before Kyler Murray got hurt and what they did after, because after he got hurt, he stopped running. And when you take away, I mean, that's what he does so well. It'd be like telling Lamar Jackson to stop running and then being like, oh, well, the Ravens offense got worse. Of course it's going to get worse when you have a quarterback who can give you 100 rushing yards and had 10 rushing touchdowns in their first 9 games. Like he was their goal line back. And you take that away, your offense becomes a lot more predictable because then either you're handing it off to Kenyon Drake or you're going to throw it to D-Hop, right? Like there's not a whole lot of unpredictability there. So I do think that there's better days to come for this offense because in the first 10 weeks, D-Hop and Kyler looked like league winners. The one negative for them in the second half of the season is the fantasy community really turned on Cliff Kingsbury. And when that happens, that's usually a very bad sign for coaches.
That is very true. They really did. Although I will say that I feel like the fantasy community was sort of skeptical, I guess, about Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, I know when he took over originally and the air raid and everything, everybody's like, okay, well, let's give this a shot, right? This could be interesting. I mean, we have seen it in various forms kind of make its way to the NFL. And so I think there was some hope, but a lot of skepticism. But I think what we have seen the last couple years is that you're right. People have sort of turned on Cliff. I think some of it is just for a guy who, you know, preaches this air raid, right, and preaches this wide open form of football. They tend to be really conservative in weird spots. You know, there are times where they're down close and instead of maybe going for it or being aggressive toward the end zone, you know, we'll see them play conservative or we'll see them kick field goals when a lot of times it seems to make sense to maybe try and go for it on fourth down. I think that has something to do with it, but yeah, once you've lost fantasy Twitter as an offensive minded coach, it might be the beginning of the end for Cliff Kingsbury down there in the desert. Any other things though that you saw from last year that you feel like need to improve for this offense?
I would prefer if they kind of just settled on one running back, whether it be Drake or Edmonds, because it would just make fantasy more fun. Last year, how it worked out was like Edmonds was their pass catcher. And I don't, which would that annoy me more than anything that Kingsbury did, because Kenyon Drake has shown in his NFL career that, like, he's a pretty good pass catching back. So taking him off the field, I think, only makes your offense more predictable because, hey, Edmonds is in, we're probably throwing the ball. Oh, Drake's in, we're probably running the ball. And I would prefer it if they just kind of settled on one, especially because with Kyler Murray's running ability, like, you would never know then, like, oh, is it going to be a run play? Is it going to be a pass play? And then I just think what it can do for that offense to have one lead back that could kind of keep the defenses guessing would help a lot, because it's something that, like, Bill Belichick used to say with James White and when, like, Sony Michel and stuff, that our offense is easy to predict when those guys are on the field. Like, it becomes easier to stop.
Yeah, I know that I was, you know, I was the chief culprit in the Kenyon Drake hype train last year. Like, I really was high on him, and I drafted him in some spots, and at least the start of the year was pretty miserable. He turned it around late in the year, and that was sort of, you know, that was encouraging to see, but that beginning of the year was rough. I think, if I remember right, I think he said kind of what got him going was that his mom basically called him out and was like, you're not playing well. And, like, you know, when mom calls you and says you're not playing well, then you really do have to reevaluate some things. And I think that's part of kind of what got him going a little bit. So maybe we should, you know, if anybody knows how to get in touch with Kenyon Drake's mom and use her as a motivational speaker for the offseason, that would be great.
Can you imagine if your mom called you and was like, you made bad fantasy picks this week?
Oh, man. I would be crushed. It's funny, too, because my mom watches. She watches Fantasy Live, and she doesn't care about football. She doesn't know anything about football. But she watches the show, like, regularly, and she's just like, I like watching you on TV. I like when you're wearing your nice suit. She's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But it's great.
My mom does the same thing.
And I'm like, thanks, Mom. I appreciate that. The other thing about this offense – you can talk me off the ledge here if I'm getting crazy, but I am really about to give up on Christian Kirk. You know, I've tried it for a few years. This year I was not quite so. Last year I was really big on Christian Kirk, and he was just okay. Although it turned out to be that last year was the best season he's had so far, 68 catches, 709. And then I'd say last year, I mean 2019. So 68 catches, 709 yards. Just the 3 touchdowns. He had 6 touchdowns this year, which is a career high. But again, there's just nothing about Christian Kirk's season that really made you feel like, yeah, I got to have this guy on my roster. I got to have him in my starting lineup. And it's been 3 years of just mediocre at best play for him. And now with Nuke there and obviously just absorbing so many targets, I'm just sort of feeling like, you know, this is kind of who Christian Kirk is. Like, I think I'm ready to just kind of tap out. I think I'm walking away from the table on this one.
Yeah, I am as well. I don't think that's crazy at all, Marcus, because I kind of went a roundabout way of getting sucked into Christian Kirk this year. Like, I wasn't high on him coming into drafts. And then he struggled the first month and was dropped. And I got sucked into hyping him up as, like, this big waiver wire pickup who can become a weekly starter for you, because he had a nice stretch in the middle of the season, 22, 20, 23. It came against the Cowboys, the Seahawks, and the Dolphins. Dolphins defense is legit, but then after that, I don't believe he scored 15. He had one game over 10 points and none with 15 the rest of the way. So it's just too inconsistent for my liking. And I agree with you. I think it's Kyler and D-Hop here in the passing game. No more Andy Isabella and best ball. No more Christian Kirk. I just got to wash my hands of it right now.
That was another guy. Andy Isabella is another guy that fantasy Twitter sort of loves. He's like a darling of fantasy Twitter, who really just, like, it's funny because, like, you don't hear from him. You don't hear him do much. And then he'll take a slant and he'll go 65, 70 yards with it. And suddenly, like, everybody comes out of the woodworks again. And they're like, Andy Isabella. And, like, then we don't hear from him for like a month.
Jeff Janis 2.0.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I honestly wouldn't be surprised if we see the Cardinals do something this offseason to sort of bolster their wide receiver. Remember, it was just a couple years ago, right? They drafted Isabella, Keyshawn Johnson from Fresno State, Hakeem Butler, all in the same draft. And look, I know it's only been a couple years, but none of those guys has shown really any inkling of doing anything at this point. In fact, Hakeem Butler, I don't think, is even on the Cardinals roster at this point.
He, if I remember correctly, got picked up by the Eagles, and they're trying to convert him to a tight end.
That's right. That's correct. So, I mean, we see how that's going.
And they're going to lose Fitz too, probably. I know probably. It's not a guarantee, but.
Right. Right. I mean, there's a very good chance that Larry Fitzgerald retires, you know, which would not be surprising considering how long he's been in the league and how productive he's been. So at some point, I think they really do have to look at trying to bring in some wide receiver help because as great as Nuke is, you do have to have some diversity. You have to have somebody else to throw the football to. You talked about Kenyon Drake and him back there with Chase Edmonds. I talked about the fact that I was, you know, driving the bus for his hype last season. What is his draft value next year? Since we were all, you know, we were disillusioned coming into the year. We all sort of, you know, had that reality punch in the gut. How do we value him for drafts next year?
So I think Adam Rank made a good point after the season that like Kenyon Drake, while he didn't live up to our expectations as a first round RB1, he also, you know, he wasn't terrible. And usually when a player doesn't live up to expectations, like Rank said, he's going to get drafted. He finished as a top 20 running back, but I expect him to get drafted outside the top 20 because he was a letdown compared to what we expected out of him. And I was like, that's a really good point. And if that ends up being the case and you could get him as like a low end RB2, in fantasy drafts, I would be interested. But then I keep going back to he didn't catch a whole lot of passes. He had two games all year with over 100 scrimmage yards. And his value the second half of the year was because he was getting so many touchdowns. And if those become either go down or get spread out a little bit more, he becomes really hard to trust. So Kenyon Drake, I think, is going to be one of those hard to kind of pinpoint exactly where you feel comfortable with him. But I am anticipating he'll probably go in like round 4, but I think I would like him a lot more if he fell like another round.
I am just sort of amazed. He only had 31 targets this past season. He had 30. They gave him 35 targets the year before when he only played half the year with them, you know, and that was, I know that was part of the reason I was so excited about him. I'm like, all right, he got 35 targets in 8 games. You know, you do the easy math, right? You spread that over 16 games, that's 70 targets. That's a pretty big number. But even if he didn't hit 70, even if he was still at, you know, 55 or 60, I would have been okay with that. The fact that they just didn't throw him the football was sort of mind-boggling to me. And you're right. He's, you know what? I imagine Kenyon Drake's going to be that guy where you're on the clock in, say, the third round or something like that. And he's sitting there and there's maybe a wide receiver or two. And you're really going to be like, do I take him now? Can I wait and see if he comes back to me in the fourth? He's going to be that guy that I think, you know, you're going to have potentially a lot of drafters remorse over, you know, unless he steps it up and has a huge 2021 season. But he's going to be really, really hard to figure out next
year. He probably shouldn't tweet before the year that he's going to win everyone fantasy championships.
Might be a good idea. Look, you know how I feel about people tweeting at players, but maybe sometimes, you know, maybe it's possible to be too confident. I don't know. And inflate expectations. No idea. All right. So those were our picks, or the draft picks, I should say, 13 through 16. We'll get back to it next week with, let me do the math, 17 to 20. Of course, we're going to have some teams that enter the draft ranks coming up this weekend because there's another round of NFL playoffs. It's the divisional week. So as always, we should probably put together a lineup for folks who are playing daily fantasy. I went through it and look, man, I mean, it's the divisional playoffs. So no surprise, there aren't a lot of easy picking matchups, right? It's going to be tough to put together a lineup. So curious to see where you went, how you built your daily lineup for this week.
I went with the, I would say maybe it seems a little obvious, but they're expensive. I went with a Chiefs stack though. Like I have Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill all in my DFS lineup. With rounding it out, I had Cam Akers as my RB1. He's under 6,000, but last week he looked really good. He was getting all the work there. I like Cam Akers a lot this week and just, you know, in like 2021. And then I have Devin Singletary as my RB2 only because he's under 5,000. And with no Zach Moss, like, can he maybe score a touchdown? Can he maybe get a little bit more work? I do think he'll get more work than we've seen him. And then rounding it out, I have Gabe Davis at 4,000. You got to get some cheap guys in there if you want to get this cheap stack. Willie Snead at 3,300 just because we've seen it. Lamar will rely on Willie Snead as like a chain mover and he can get like 4 or 5 catches that way. And then my flex is J.K. Dobbins at 6K because I think the Ravens are going to really try to run the ball against the Bills. That is the Bills' one weakness, and we saw the Colts try to take advantage of it last week. And then defense had to go cheap again. But Rams' defense at 2,600, I understand they're facing Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, but Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey and those guys could still make some plays. So it's the second cheapest defense. Give me what I think is the best defense in football.
So we had some similarities. I didn't go the triple stack for the Chiefs, but I did go with a Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill stack because I just felt like that, you know, because there were no good quarterback options out there that I just really, really loved. I'm like, let's just go big and let's just get Mahomes and put him in there. I did have Cam Akers there as one of my running backs. I went Nick Chubb at the other running back spot because, you know, we know he's going to get touches. And I think for the Browns, if they want to be successful, part of it is going to be running the football, trying to keep the ball out of Mahomes' hands as much as possible and just trying to eat as much clock short in the game if you can. The other wide receivers, I went Emmanuel Sanders. I thought about trying to slot Michael Thomas in there against that Bucs secondary. It just wasn't quite going to work, but I figured, well, I can go with Sanders. Maybe you don't get the same number of targets, but there's still an opportunity for him to get the football. As long as Sean Payton goes with Drew, there was a lot of Taysom Hill last week, which, you know, is – that's a whole other conversation for another time. But hopefully we see more breeze, which means they're throwing the football a little bit more. So I went with Emmanuel Sanders. I also put Scotty Miller because you need a value pick to kind of fit all these other big names in there. And even with the big three receivers there in Tampa, there's still the occasional Scotty Miller targets, and maybe they can pop a big one downfield with him and he finds his way into the end zone. So I'm sort of playing for that potential touchdown upside. My tight end, I went with Mark Andrews, and you and I talked earlier in the week about the Bills, their struggles against tight ends, the fact that they had a tough time with Jack Doyle. You and I were speculating that maybe they put Tre'Davious White on Mark Andrews to try and neutralize him a little bit, but I'm still willing to take the shot at him. My flex was Kareem Hunt, so I went with Nick Chubb, hoping that the Browns would run the football a lot, but just in case they do have to throw it, in case the Chiefs put up a lot of points, I have Kareem Hunt as my fallback there at the flex. And then defensively, I went with the Packers. I know it's, you know, look, it's not necessarily, they haven't been great this year, but I'm looking at the Rams quarterback situation, and I know they're trying to get Jared Goff ready, and hopefully his thumb's going to be a little bit better this week, but even a healthy Jared Goff has not always been great this year. So I feel like that is going to give me enough confidence to throw the Packers in there and see if they can perform. But it's going to be interesting. I know I was going to ask you which game you're most looking forward to, but I know the answer to that.
It's going to be the Ravens, right? This is the game that maybe I'm biased, but I just feel like it is, I think, easily the game to get excited about because it's two young quarterbacks who, again, I'm biased. I'm a Bills fan. It's two young quarterbacks and two pretty good offenses that also have good defenses, so there'll be challenges for them. But, yeah, I'm excited. Like, I'm getting wings for that game, Marcus. I'm going to probably be wearing all Bills gear again. And I'm excited it's Saturday night because 10 a.m. kickoff was fun, but I like 5 p.m., it'll be nice to have, like, a beer and watch the game. I felt a little weird trying to do that at 10 a.m.
You also have to wear the same outfit that you wore last week. You know that, right? Like you can't modify. You got to wear what you wore last week because obviously it's the lucky charm. It's what got them the win.
I washed all the clothes this week because my fiance said the same thing. She was like, you have to wear them everything again. And I told my fiance, like, she has to wear Bills gears this week too now because the Ravens, I am nervous. Like if the Bills lose to the Chiefs or something, but I want to get to the AFC Championship game and the Ravens are scary.
The Ravens are scary, and especially with Lamar turning into like the Lamar Jackson superhero that we've seen in the past, because we saw that last week. And so that's it. Oh, here's the thing. If I'm the Chiefs, I'm worried about both those teams. I mean, obviously they've got their own problems. They will have their hands full with the Browns this week. But, you know, if they get through, I think they're going to have problems with either the Ravens or the Bills. So, it's going to be fun, and you know, especially for me as an impartial observer to just sit back and be able to watch without the emotional stress. That's going to be great. So
you mean you weren't pacing around your living room when that fumble was being reviewed late in the fourth quarter?
No, I think I went and grabbed another handful of pretzels and was just like chilling. It was great. So, Godspeed to you. And I'm sure we'll talk about it on Tuesday when we get back together for the next version of this podcast. In the meantime, for us, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, unicorns are real. They're just fat and gray, and we call them rhinos. Be safe. Take care of yourselves. Wear a mask, and we will see you on Tuesday.